This is a sound from the vast high-domed General Assembly Hall at United Nations headquarters. More than 100 delegations are gathering for one of the meetings at the current session of the Assembly. Some are numerically large. Some are small. Some represent great, even decisive, power in the world. The majority do not. Yet in this place, all have an equal chance to speak and to be heard. And what they say here, their views and attitudes, have often been described as a mirror of our world as it is. It's a good description, but it doesn't go far enough. For this is the center, the heart place, where the actions of nations can be harmonized in the pursuit of peace and a standard of living worthy of the dignity of all men.
The United States Committee for the United Nations presents The United Nations at 17, produced by United Nations Radio to mark the 17th year since the World Organization began its work. The program is narrated by Jason Robards.
In 1945, when the first session of the General Assembly opened at Church House in London, there were places for 51 delegations. Before the session opened this year, the silence in the great hall at headquarters was punctuated by the sound of carpenters at work. Seats were being installed. More seats than there were last year. Seats to accommodate more than the 104 delegations who sat there then. Such is the measure of the organization's growth and of the changed and still changing world we live in. The joyful sounds you can hear in the background have been heard many times in many places in recent years. They are the sounds of change, the sounds of people welcoming freedom, the acknowledgement of nationhood. One of today's absolute certainties is that there will be similar celebrations in the near future as the age of colonialism continues to retreat further and further into history. As Ambassador Adlai Stevenson said in a recent assembly debate,
whatever may have been the justification, whatever may have been the benefits of colonialism in the past, its era is over, and it must give way to the superior right of peoples to determine for themselves how they should be governed.
The whole question of emerging nations has been very much at the center during the past 12 months. Many frequently passionate debates in several UN bodies have sought the means to accelerate further the political transitions from dependence to independence. But this is not the whole story. When President Kennedy addressed the last session of the Assembly, he said,
political sovereignty is but a mockery without the means of meeting poverty and illiteracy and disease. Self-determination is but a slogan if the future holds no hope. That is why my nation now proposes officially designating this decade of the 1960s as the United Nations Decade of Development. Development can become a cooperative and not a competitive enterprise, to enable all nations, however diverse in their systems and beliefs, to become in fact as well as in law, free and equal nations.
On December 19, 1961, the General Assembly proclaimed the Decade of Development. And since then, a new global effort to mobilize the accumulated experience and resources of mankind in a full-scale and sustained attack on poverty has been gathering momentum. As Acting Secretary General U Thant has said,
the basic fact, the basic circumstance, which warrants and indeed demands a bold worldwide approach to economic and social development, is the now demonstrated possibility for mankind at large to create resources rather than depend on them. Endowed as our planet is, and able to take advantage of its riches as we have become, it is no longer resources that limit decisions.
But development work is often inconspicuous work, and it is the UN's response to immediate tensions that usually grips the world's attention. In the last year, these have not been lacking. In the Congo, for example, it's been Katanga and the unceasing UN effort to end the secession of the rich mineral province. By July, with the problem 2 years old, and after long and fruitless talks between Prime Minister Adula of the central government and Katanga's President Shombi, U Thant was moved to say,
"At the risk of oversimplification, I may say that the problem of the Congo is now the problem of Katanga. And the problem of Katanga is the problem of finances. And the problem of finances, in turn, is the problem of Union Minière."
Then came the final plan for a settlement. Looking towards a federal constitution, an equal sharing of the tax revenue from the huge mining operations, and the unification of all armed forces. U Thant saw the acceptance of this plan by both Mr. Adula and Mr. Shombe as a necessary and important step forward, adding that if it is scrupulously carried out, it should put an end to conflict and insecurity in the country. Another important step towards peace was taken in the Security Council chamber on August 15th. At a brief ceremony that day, an agreement was signed which ended the long and dangerous dispute between Indonesia and the Netherlands over West New Guinea, or West Irian. The UN is now the temporary executive authority in the territory. Soon after May 1st next year, the UN will hand over the administration to Indonesia, and Indonesia has agreed, with UN help and participation, to give the Papuan inhabitants of the territory an opportunity to decide their own future before the end of 1969. This agreement, following months of negotiation, prompted these comments from the representatives of the two governments at the signing ceremony. First, Dr. Subandrio, Foreign Minister of Indonesia.
"For the Indonesian people, this very moment is regarded as a very important national occasion, since with the signing of the agreement, the Indonesian unity has been restored, and therefore the basis for the struggle for independence completed as part and parcel of the Indonesian revolution."
For the Netherlands, Ambassador J.H. Van Rooyen.
"The Netherlands has attached primary importance to the inclusion in the agreement of provisions safeguarding the future political, economic, cultural and educational development of the territory and its inhabitants, and guaranteeing for the Papuans, under active supervision of the United Nations, a genuine and valid exercise of freedom of choice with regard to their future."
This was perhaps the year's most notable example of the UN as a center for harmonizing the actions of nations. And even though the same cannot be said for the disarmament talks at Geneva, it is nevertheless possible to find in those talks some reason for hope. Agreement was reached on the composition of the new negotiating body, the 18-nation committee, which includes 8 non-aligned powers. Agreement was also reached on the broad principles of disarmament, the guidelines toward an effective treaty. In his annual report to the General Assembly, U Thant notes these developments, and of the talks themselves, he wrote,
"In spite of orderly and businesslike discussions in depth, little progress has been made. At the same time, it's encouraging that both sides have, for the first time, submitted detailed draft treaty plans, and that in spite of lack of progress, the parties are determined to continue their negotiation."
Even more encouraging are the prospects for international cooperation in outer space. Back in March, with earlier deadlocks and difficulties overcome, the UN Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space began its work with an agenda spanning both the technical and scientific and the legal aspects of this newest and perhaps most exciting of all human adventures. The work began well as the committee heard that President Kennedy and Chairman Khrushchev had exchanged ideas on possible joint action. President Kennedy had suggested collaboration on a weather satellite system, tracking stations, a study of the Earth's magnetic field, and space medicine. When the United States Representative, Ambassador Francis Plimpton, addressed the committee, he said,
"The President indicated his willingness to discuss broader cooperation in still more challenging projects, including unmanned exploration of the lunar surface and the mutual definition of steps to be taken for an exhaustive scientific investigation of Mars and Venus, possibly by man himself."
In endorsing these ideas, Chairman Khrushchev also looked ahead. Here is part of his statement as it was read to the committee by the Soviet representative, Ambassador Platon Morozov.
В дальнейшем международное сотрудничество в освоении космоса, если мы сможем заложить сейчас для него прочную основу, будет несомненно распространяться.
In the future, international cooperation in space exploration, if we can now lay a firm basis for it, will doubtlessly spread to ever newer fields of space research. We hope that the scientists of the USSR and the USA will be able, hand in hand with the scientists of other countries, to take up the elaboration and implementation of many projects for space exploration.
During the year, American and Soviet scientists have been following up on this initial exchange during a series of meetings at the UN European office in Geneva. The course toward cooperation has been set, and the need for it recognized, particularly by the men who already know space. Colonel John Glenn and Major German Titov both visited UN headquarters during the year, and here's what they said. Colonel Glenn.
The entire effort to explore outer space rests on many scientific disciplines whose growth over the years has been entirely international. As space science and space technology grow still further and our projects become more ambitious, we will be relying more and more on international teamwork. A natural center for that teamwork is the United Nations.
And Major Titov.
Ведь одному человеку сейчас не под силу даже простой полет на самолете. Одному человеку тем более не под силу космический полет.
After all, at the present time, one person can't even fly in a plane by himself, and even less can one single individual conquer outer space. There are enormous complexities involved, and consequently, enormous numbers of people and large numbers of countries have to participate in this. And as we do this, we will achieve even greater successes, and even more will the riches of nature be put to the service of humanity.
Thus, after 17 years, the search for peace continues over a wider field than ever before, and more are engaged in that search than ever before. It would be naive to imagine that all is or will be smooth sailing. But, as Ambassador Adlai Stevenson has said,
our security and our salvation is the ability of the nations and the governments to see through the clouds of conflict and discern the truth about our common interests, and then boldly and in concert to act. The United Nations is a sensitive measure of the tremors which shake the community of nations. Tremors which have built up to dangerous levels. But we are not helpless spectators. The tremors are man-made, and man can still them.
The United Nations at 17 was narrated by Jason Robards, produced by the international staff of the United Nations Radio, and presented by the United States Committee for the United Nations in connection with the World Organization's 17th anniversary. For further information about the United Nations, write to the United States Committee for the United Nations, New York 11, New York. That is, the U.S. Committee for the United Nations, New York 11, New York.